coming up on a special New Year's rebroadcast of an all-women edition of the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast, we talk to the former Cummins intern, who's now the company's president. Marion County's public health director talks about the pandemic's ongoing impact. A classroom project inspires a high-tech success story. Trendiana spotlights women-owned beauty businesses. A Purdue Center prepares women for gender-related workforce challenges. And a special insiders panel focuses on women in tech. Welcome to a special all-women edition of the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. I'm Andy Ober. This week, we focus on the women leading the way in business, health, sports, technology, and more with a slate of industry-leading guests and guest hosts. Jennifer Rumsey is making history in her hometown of Columbus at the company where she started as an intern. She is the first woman to serve as president and chief operating officer at Cummins. Rumsey joined Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick to talk about how she broke the glass ceiling and what's next in innovation and technology at Cummins.
Congratulations on the promotion. I mentioned earlier, this is home for you, right? You grew up in Cummins or in Columbus in the shadow of Cummins.
I sure did. Yeah, Cummins has really been a part of my life, my entire life. As you said, I grew up in Columbus around many Cummins employees and engineers, and including my own father. And it's really meant a lot to me throughout my life and certainly in my career.
Went to Purdue, of course, one of the world's elite engineering universities. And then you ventured out east, right, to Cambridge and some graduate work at MIT. And your first job is actually at a startup of sorts. Give us the lowdown on that.
Yeah, so my husband and I met at Purdue. We were both were studying engineering, and I had the opportunity to go to MIT in Boston for graduate school. And he was working out there. And so when I graduated, I was looking for an opportunity for working on technology that would make a difference in the world. And that led me to a company that was working on fuel cell technology more than 20 years ago. So I spent a couple of years out there working for a small company trying to make fuel cells a reality at that time.
Yeah, and you wound up back at Cummins. That wasn't necessarily by design. You just, there was the opportunity there and you went for it.
Yeah, I'd say there's really two key drivers that brought me back to Columbus and to Cummins. The first was this motivation to make a positive difference and work on technologies that would have an impact on the environment and on customers. And I enjoyed my time working for a startup company and working on fuel cell technologies and saw it was many, many years from really impacting the environment and the customer. I'd worked as an intern for Cummins while I was at Purdue and really had experienced the culture of the company, which resonated with what was important to me, and knew that I would have an opportunity to work on technologies that reduce the environmental impact of diesel engines. So I spent, you know, much of my early career at Cummins doing just that.
You have succeeded in a big way in a male-dominated industry. Talk about the challenges that you faced perhaps early on in advancing in a male-dominated industry.
Yeah, as you said, really engineering by itself and certainly, you know, working for a large industrial manufacturing company like Cummins, there's not lots of women. I will say Cummins has been very progressive in embracing diversity and recognizing the business value of diversity early. And so I felt, you know, very open, inclusive environment at Cummins and had a lot of support from mentors and bosses in my career that really allowed me to continue to grow and achieve my potential at Cummins. I have had to get comfortable with the fact that I'm often in settings where there's not necessarily someone that looks like me. Mm-hmm. I think there were enough other women at Cummins that I saw role models. In fact, my first boss as an intern at Cummins was another female. So I had enough role models and strong male supporters that I really felt confident in what I was doing. And was able to overcome what at times was bias that existed around me and situations where there were only other men.
Right. I thought it was interesting. I saw in some of the research that you think it's important for women to see, other women, other role models, if you will. But it's really important that women define their own path as they look at their careers.
Yes, exactly. And as I said, I think, at Cummins, for much of my career, I really didn't consider that I was breaking the glass ceiling, if you will. I think it's been more recently. So I was the first female to become chief technical officer for Comma, is now the first female to become COO. And that's certainly something that I'm really proud of. And I think that that is important, because you need to see others that look like you, that give you confidence that you too can be in those positions. And so I'm proud to have the opportunity to continue to raise that ceiling.
Yeah, I know you're taking this leadership role in an exciting time for Cummins. Cummins, obviously, an incredibly important company for Indiana. As we kind of wind down here, talk about what you're excited about with all of the technology, the innovation going on at in Cummins, at what that can mean in the years ahead.
Yeah, there's some, you know, challenges that our planet faces, and I'm excited to work for a company that's really taking the environmental challenges head on. And we're working to continue to advance the traditional business combustion engines that my business is a part of, and also invest in technologies of the future. So over the last 5 years, we've established a new power business. And more recently, you've seen significant investment in hydrogen and fuel cell technologies. And we really feel like continuing to drive technology advancement across those range of technologies and helping our customers shift to that future state is going to be a key part of the decades ahead for Cummins. And one thing that I'm excited to help lead for the company.
Very good. Jennifer Rumsey, the new president and chief operating officer at Cummins. Jennifer, it's been a real treat to have you on the show. Congratulations again on the new roles, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
Great. Thank you, Gary.
All right.
For more than 30 years, Dr. Virginia Cain has worked to promote and advance public health in Indianapolis. She currently serves as Marion County Public Health Director and an associate professor of medicine at the IU School of Medicine. Cain spoke with Inside Indiana Business Health reporter Kylie Valletta in the business of health.
I know this last year has been a lot of tough decision making. You've talked about how it's been a balancing act. Just give us a glimpse into the last year, what it's been like to have to make some really tough calls.
So, you know, collaboration. Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, we've got, yeah, we can hear you good.
Okay, sorry. So collaboration has just been tremendous. And we've just had so many voices that have helped us to make better decisions. We've had to sometimes, like even in the middle of the night, have to make some major decisions under a lot of pressure, which can have a major impact on a community. And so how do you do that? And what you find out is because of the many voices that you're able to collaborate with, hear the different perspectives. For example, we've worked quite frequently with our Chamber of Commerce from a business standpoint. You're balancing these short and long-term needs of economy versus public health needs of an entire community. And those are not always easy to do. But when you can have scientific experts help you with this perspective, looking at things from a business associate perspective, even the clergy with the faith base have helped to make these better decisions and sometimes tough decisions.
Yeah, and you mentioned off camera, you know, the science is moving so fast that it was hard to make some of those decisions with the science changing so quickly. Of course, now vaccination is center stage. What are the challenges as you're leading the charge here in Indiana to get the largest city in the state vaccinated?
I think the number one challenge for us is just having adequate amount of vaccines to distribute to the community. And because we don't have adequate vaccine, we're having to make the tough choices about who should get the vaccine first. Our second challenge is, of course, is how do we, from a health equity standpoint, be able to do an equitable distribution of the vaccine in some of our hardest to reach populations who may not have access to the internet or a computer, and they have to do it by phone, but sometimes by the time they're ready to do it by phone, all the appointments are filled. And so we have to work with our faith-based institutions, our civic organizations, our neighborhood associations, and those trusted community leaders in those areas to help us get the vaccination to the people that's really needed, as well as our teachers, our frontline people like our any bus drivers or air traffic controllers, just tough challenges.
Yeah, you said you love your plan that you have for vaccines, but it's hard with supply.
It's very difficult with supplies. And there's so many deserving people who need to get this vaccine. But we've primarily worked with a risk stratification standpoint, trying to keep the people from hospitalizations, from being in the intensive care units and dying.
Right.
But it's a tough challenge based on the availability of vaccine.
Okay, we have to talk about March Madness, just days away from tip-off. You believe this is a good thing for Indianapolis and that the city is ready to host it safely. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, you know what? We've seen something tremendous here. We've seen the city of Indianapolis and even the state of Indiana come together. So we are just so glad to welcome people back to our downtown area. And let me just say, it brings a sense of optimism to everyone in this community. But hey, I'm not surprised about this because we've had a track record of coming together. And even though the stakes were really high, we have met the challenge. And so we're showing cities across the country how to get back to business.
All right. Well, like we said, tip-off just days away. Again, another balancing act decision. Dr. Kane, thanks for being on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me. You're a very popular show, and I love watching you guys all the time.
A college classroom project has turned into high-tech success for Haley Marie Keith. The project inspired her to team with her husband to launch Mito Material Solutions, a company boosting the sporting goods, automotive, and aerospace industries thanks to a high-tech nano additive. Keith discussed the company's growth with Nextech president Karen Jung.
First question, just to help folks better understand at home what Mito Solutions is and really what composite materials are about, could you explain it just in layman's terms for us?
Yeah, so composite materials include everything from fiberglass to carbon fiber to even plastics. But to make it easy, think of a multi-layer cake. So you take a fiberglass layer, you add some resin, which would be the frosting, and then you keep going. So what Mito does is we go right into that resin system to basically act like the sprinkles to make the cake a lot more delicious, better, and multifunctional.
Thank you. Very, very helpful. You grew up in Elkhart, which really means RV country around here. How did that experience in terms of growing up in that economy, in that community, how did that influence your career aspirations?
I think it was very inspiring to watch the ebbs and flows, the ups and downs. You know, you can't come out of Elkhart and not be afraid to take a little bit of risk. My mom was an executive in the industry, so growing up, I listened to warranty issues and problems that were rife with the units all around the dinner table every day. So when I got to my MBA and I found this technology, I knew I'd always end up in business, probably manufacturing, and something just clicked. I knew. So, yeah.
Excellent. Mito is still a relatively young organization, just about 3 years old, but you've been very successful in raising capital.
Yeah.
How was that process? But then also, how has the funds been used to help fuel the innovation of Mito?
Yeah, so we have wonderful funding partners, everything from the National Science Foundation to Heritage Group, TechStars, Elevate Ventures, and Vision Tech Partners, and several others. And we have been so blessed by the network that they provided, the experience in the research and development. I mean, each of them add their own unique subset into Mito's commercialization and innovation and development. And so these funds have been used to create our flagship product, scale it, what's now commercially available, Ego, and then also work on three other products in development, which we're really excited about.
Great times for you. You know, when I hear the word composite materials, for some reason, it conjures up thoughts of sustainability.
Yes.
Could you explain really how that plays into the Mito business model and thinking about the broader green economy?
Absolutely. So I think everyone knows about metals and wood and stone, but composite materials are the next age of materials. And in order to advance technology as we're seeing it today, we need to think sustainably. We need to design products sustainably to last longer. And what that means for composites, because they're able to be so customized, is you can reinforce them with multifunctionality. And that's really what Mito is coming alongside our partners to do. We collaborate with them to think through designing their products with sustainability in mind to ultimately make products lighter, durable, and tougher.
Excellent. It is National Women's History Month, and as a female leader, I've certainly had women along the way that have encouraged me to keep going when maybe I didn't want to, and I'm sure you've had the same as well. Would you mind sharing a story of a specific example?
Yeah, well, my mom, of course, right? Growing up, watching her take on the RV world as an executive was inspiring to a young to me as a daughter. And then as I've grown in my career, there have been so many women who have impacted me and encouraged me to be an authentic leader. I think Lisa Mitchell, who was our managing director at the TechStars Heritage Group program. I think Ginger Rothrock, who's a polymer chemist, a mom, and a VC, and she's amazing. And so these women are always inspiring me to continue growing and never giving up.
Well, Haley Marie, thank you so much for joining us today. This was very insightful, and I wish you nothing but the best with your business.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yelp is reporting that consumer interest in women-owned businesses on its platform soared more than 2,000% in 2020 compared to 2019. Yelp Senior Regional Lead of Marketing and Communications, Brittany Smith, has a rundown of Indiana women-owned beauty businesses with guest host Nicole Pence-Becker, owner of Pence Media Group.
Britt, we should mention first and foremost that breaking into the beauty industry is pretty tough to do.
Yeah, and it's been an especially tough year for this industry with a lot of salons having to pivot and, you know, restrictions. And so these are just the tip of the iceberg with some great Hoosier businesses throughout the state.
So let's start with the first one right here in Indianapolis. Yes. In Broad Ripple. The name of this business is Curly Coils, focused on hair care.
Yes, especially curly and wavy hair, which I know we can both appreciate. Yelp reviews really love that not only are you going here for an appointment, but you're going to walk away with some great tips of how to take care of your hair and really embrace your natural curls when you leave. It's a wonderful Black-owned business. The owner, Brittany, has been in the industry for more than 10 years of an experience, and they're doing all the COVID safety precautions if you're new to getting back into a salon.
And so from hair care, let's go to body care, also a minority-owned business, of course, a women-owned business.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about today. This one is Shea Body Works, but they play in the e-commerce space only right now.
Definitely, and actually found in some stores like 86th Street, the Whole Foods business, you're going to see some of their items on the shelves. The owner, Saida, really specializes in sensitive skins, dry skins. You can find products for all types of skin types, but she's using all natural ingredients. And you can ship things throughout the country. Over $39 if you purchase something online, you can get free shipping. I've actually sent it to family before. It's a great gift.
And we've got all of the products right here that we're talking about today.
Exactly.
Another business that we want to highlight, this one's all the way in Terre Haute, Indiana.
Yeah.
KB Shimmer, you can see it right there on the screen. I love the colors with this brand.
Exactly. And the owner, Christy Rose, you know, that's why she started the business. She loved colors, creativity, and stemmed that into a nail polish business. And a lot of people don't realize that we've got our own nail polish business that's a Hoosier-based business. You're going to find really budget-friendly nail products online, as well as cuticle care, everything that you could need to take care of your nails and self-care for your hands.
And we were looking at how they were focused on also the application of nail polish, which is really interesting. Let's talk about Bass Farms in Shelbyville, Indiana. The name tells you kind of what it is, but I love this product because it's helping cancer patients as well.
Yes, I love that the owner, Jana, a fellow 10-year 4-H member of Showing Goats, that's actually how she started her business. Her love through that turned into raising the goats on site, so you'll see that through a lot of their products. But she has found it dozens of hospitals and different shops throughout the state and is really known for the Triple B Hydrating Cream, which is recognized by oncologists and dermatologists to help maintain skin integrity during radiation.
That's amazing. I love that. That's Bass Farms. And our last one, Bargersville Wellness. You can figure out from the name that it's in Bargersville. But what you can't figure out, not only women-owned, but there's a little bit of a patriotic theme.
Yes, definitely. 50% veteran-owned as well. So 100% women-owned, 50% veteran-owned. And it's located right in the heart of Bargersville. And the beautiful thing about this business, it is a one-stop shop for self-care. So everything from waxing to yoga classes to facials, you can find it all under one roof. So it's really a good place just to go take care of yourself.
So you're saying we can go and spend a day there together?
Yes, exactly. I was going through the menu. I was like, oh, we need some of this.
Everybody needs some of that, right? All right, Brittany Smith from Yelp joining us today to talk about women-owned beauty products and beauty businesses here in Indiana.
Thanks Brittany, so much, Nicole.
Thank you. Always great to see you.
Likewise.
Remember, you can catch Inside Indiana Business Television on stations throughout the state every weekend. Head to InsideIndianaBusiness.com to check listings. New Albany-based family-owned Simtech makes precision machine parts, welding, tube bending, and assembly for all types of industries. Simtech CEO Jessica Young talked about lessons learned during the pandemic and the challenges ahead with one Southern Indiana president, Wendy Dantchesser.
Now, I just read that your title is president and CEO, but that's not what's on your business card.
No, it absolutely is not. And I was going to correct you. It is team member first, so above all else.
So you're a president, but yet you still go by team member. That indicates that the role of culture is very important in SimTech. Please talk a little bit about that.
100%. Culture is our number one core value, and being a good team member is what we are each held accountable to. We're big sports fans, so Michigan's legendary football coach Bo Schembechler said it best, that there is no one person above or below the team, the team, the team, the team. And when you take into consideration what impact does it have on the team will be all the better for it. So that team mentality resounds within our four walls. We said there's a lot that is out of our control outside of the four walls, but the one thing we can control is how we treat each other as teammates and that we're a team member above all else.
So you and your other investors purchased the company in 2018. So you inherited a culture, but tell us a little bit about what SimTech is and how you've transferred that culture into the company and the vision that you've set forth.
Sure. So SimTech was, at time of acquisition, a 43-year-old manufacturer nestled in the heart of southern Indiana in the New Albany Industrial Park, mm-hmm. With an average team membership of 20 years. And that was with myself and my partner driving down that average tenure. SimTech stands for Computer Integrated Manufacturing Technology. That's just a super fancy way of saying that we are a manufacturer to manufacturers. So the joke that we say with our sales team is that there's nothing that we can't make but a baby, and nothing we can't fix but a broken heart.
Fascinating. But okay, so your culture ideas and your culture philosophies and integrating that into an existing team, how did that work?
It was actually not a challenge at all. What we did was lead by example. Mm-hmm. And I say lead by example. The first thing we did was everyone's business card was identified before their position or their title or their department, but as team member. That was their signature lines. And then that was truly the identifier. So even in our hiring and our requisitions that we have posted, you'll notice that it's team member and then machinist or team member welding department. And that truly helped build the foundation that the team was first.
So you had this great team culture, which probably helped you get through the challenges caused by the pandemic.
Oh, 100%. We really do believe that if we create that culture, we live and breathe that culture of team, that we will not only attract the right partners from a supply chain standpoint, mm-hmm. but also from a customer standpoint. The other two core values that SimTech strives on is one, safety. So mm-hmm. we do say and put safety first. Each teammate, we want them leaving with the same things that they came in with. That's 10 fingers, 10 toes, eyesight, hearing. And then, of course, during the pandemic, an excessive focus and laser focus on the health and safety. Then additionally, the quality of work that we produce. We're now in our 45th year of business and strive for 100% quality parts, no matter what we're doing, whether that's prototyping, production work, production support, reverse engineering, but that the quality of work that we put out is top notch.
I'm sure that's appreciated in your recruiting efforts as well for new talent.
Absolutely. And it really is fantastic to have that reputation. In July of 2019, SimTech expanded by purchasing Access Machine and Tool and Action Material Handling. And then we went into creating that team culture within those organizations too. So blending three teams under the team umbrella.
10 seconds left. What's next for SimTech? Where do you go from here?
Going from here, we're building an empire. So we plan to be around for the next 100 plus years.
Fantastic. Jessica, thank you so very much.
Purdue University's Brock Wilson Center for Women in Management prepares women to overcome gender-related challenges they might face in the workforce. Director Mira Habashi spoke with 1150 Academy Vice President of Marketing Megan Knoll in our Ion Education segment.
I was saying, as a woman in leadership, this is particularly interesting to me. Can you tell us about some of the common challenges that you face or you see women facing as they enter the workforce?
Yeah, I think that we as a center focus a lot on the challenges women face as they enter the workforce and then also as they want to move up in the ranks and get into those leadership positions. And we do different things at each of those stages. One of the early things that women often face is confidence-related issues, so things like imposter syndrome. And so we do some programming focused on kind of how to boost your confidence and how to silence those voices in your head as you're moving into the new workspaces that you're going to occupy. We also do a lot early on with negotiation. And so how do you get that best compensation package for you and make sure that you're asking for the same thing that men in your position might ask for? And then throughout their careers, we also focus a lot on kind of representation and role models. So far too often we don't see women in those leadership positions, especially as women move into male-dominated careers. And so we try to do a lot with spotlighting and highlighting successful women, successful alumna who've come through Purdue and who are in those leadership positions just to show the students that people that look like them can occupy those spaces and those jobs.
No, that's great. It sounds like you're preparing them really well. How are you preparing the organizations and the employers for women as they enter the workforce and how to avoid that common workforce bias?
Yeah, so one of the things that I think is really a spotlight or a focus of our center is research on work-life balance. And so we have two great researchers in the Krannert School of Management, Kelly Wilson and Ellen Kosick, who do a lot of research on work-life balance and what that looks like. And so one of the things that we've tried to do every year is put out some best practices for work-life balance and what that looks like. And I think that's become especially important during the pandemic, right? And during COVID, there's so much research now talking about how COVID has disproportionately impacted women in the workplace and we're losing our jobs more. We're, you know, being affected by the unpaid labor that women are doing at home. And so just recently, 2 weeks ago, we hosted a PowerShift case competition in which we actually had some of our alumni come in and record videos on how COVID has affected their work at home and work at life. And we offered some, our students offered suggestions on what organizations could do to better that problem.
That's great. It sounds like you have a lot of interesting programming. Is there anything coming up that you want to speak more on?
Yeah, so I think our signature program is our Empowering Women in Business High School Summer Program, where we bring in students to kind of learn about business, but also do some gender empowerment programming. We offer that free, and we really look towards growing that. So that's probably our signature program. We also have a lot more case competitions and a lot more speakers coming up that are highlighted on our website. But I would say our high school program is something that we're really proud of.
That's great. So how else are you leveraging the community and the organizations in the community and even your alumna as you move forward?
Yeah, so we pair with our alumna all the time. So they come into our classes, they judge our case competitions, and we pair up with companies like Eli Lilly, PepsiCo, John Deere, GM, Accenture to do a lot of our program. They sponsor our program, they come in and they mentor our students, they give them feedback, and we even go into their companies and sometimes give workshops on what it's like to manage a diverse group and to be a leader for a diverse workforce. And so we try to impact the community as much as we can, but we also have them try to impact our students as well.
That's great. This has been really interesting for me to learn about and to read more about when I was preparing for this interview. So thank you very much, Mira. I was saying that it's I commend Purdue for doing this, and it's also just a little bit sad that we have to even have an organization like this, but
yes.
great work.
Thank you, Megan.
The new commissioner of the Indianapolis-based Horizon League brings a wealth of experience in sports law, consulting, and the NCAA. She talked about her new role and what's next for the 12-school conference with Inside Indiana business reporter Mary Rachel Redman on Inside Indiana Sports.
From an All-American on the court to the first female commissioner of the Horizon League, I sat down with Julie Roloff to get her take on college sports in 2021.
It all began as a little girl with a basketball in the small coal mining town of Pinckneyville, Illinois.
And I grew up going to the gym very much like the movie Hoosiers. The gym was open all the time. I don't know if they ever locked the doors. And I played basketball, and I was one of the few girls, and it was just all pickup. So I would just shoot around on the side until I get invited to play in these pickup scrimmage games with boys. I think because of that, I became very comfortable playing in any arena.
All that time in the gym paid off. Julie went on to star at Milliken, where she was a decorated Division III All-American. And that on-the-court college success led to a gig with the NCAA, where she joined as an intern and eventually rose to a leadership position as director of enforcement.
Just in your estimation, I mean, I know you've been out of that role for a while, but just the state of college sports today, as opposed to, you know, 15 years ago.
Even 5 years ago, the state of college sports, I think, has dramatically changed, not so much for those who are working in sports or for the transformational experiences that our student athletes are having, because you still see them come in as freshmen and graduate as seniors with incredible GPAs and, more importantly, great leadership opportunities. What's really changed is all of this interest around college sports. So you now have a pending case with the United States Supreme Court. They haven't reviewed a case involving the NCAA since the 1980s. You now have over five federal bills being proposed on all ends of the spectrum, primarily around this name, image, likeness, which the NCAA members support student athletes being able to make money off their name, image, likeness. There are some senators who think it needs to go much further, and others who might even think it needs to be more restrictive. But there is some level of federal intervention that's going to happen, likely at some point this year.
What would you say is the biggest threat to college athletics in 2021?
I think it very much is this notion of not only the federal intervention, but federal intervention to the point of changing the entire model. And if that model changes to the point of looking at literally, should there be compensation or profit sharing, the reality is there are not a lot of profits to share. And that then could cause schools to drop sports. And that to me is what we all want to avoid, because we want to keep providing all these opportunities.
And speaking of opportunities, in January, Julie was named commissioner of the Horizon League, where she's already dealing with a unique set of circumstances, navigating the pandemic.
We put together our own medical team of advisors at our 12-member institutions, and we developed what is probably a 50-plus page document. It includes testing. It includes screening. It even includes how teams travel, where they eat, where they don't eat.
Off the spin move, that's two.
This season, our men's teams played over 90% of their scheduled games, which is well above the national average that's in the 70s.
So what's the fan capacity?
Right now, we're not comfortable with fans, because even allowing family and friends, as much as we want to do, that's going to invite some exposure.
You mentioned family. I know you've got two daughters. And to be the lead commissioner of a Division I conference, you're busy, beyond busy. And I'm a new mom. I feel like I'm running around with my head cut off. So how do you do it?
It's hard. And our girls are 8 and 11. It is harder when they're little. It's still tough, though.
Julie cites Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg's 2013 book, Lean In, as her handbook for having it all.
You can have it all. It's hard to have it all at the same time. Might be in different phases in life, but regardless, you're going to need to marry your partner. And I was fortunate to do that. My husband's entirely supportive. You know, we're all in. We're a sports family, so that helps too.
What piece of advice, like a single piece of advice, would you give to young women that are interested in going into sports leadership or just the sports industry in general?
You know, there are no jobs too small. And I think especially in sports, because it is all hands on deck in sporting events. That's the point. If your mission at the end of the day is to provide this opportunity to compete, whether it's at the rec level or the collegiate level or the professional levels, then everyone has to be all in on what it's going to take to provide that opportunity. The other piece is it's okay to ask for help with mentors. I've had many men and women mentors that have just been fantastic with giving me good advice and telling me when to slow down or speed up. And that's been really important along the way.
Mary Rachel Redmond, Inside Indiana Business.
And finally this week, a special edition of The Insider, spotlighting women in technology, the challenges they face, and what needs to be done to help them succeed. The panel is hosted by TechPoint Vice President of Stakeholder Engagement Lauren Peterson, and includes Indie Women in Tech Community Engagement Coordinator Ariel Crawley, Six Feet Up CEO Gabrielle Hendricks-Parker, and Ivy Tech Community College Vice President Linda Calvin.
Let's get started, panelists. I'd love to hear from each of you. What was your career trajectory? How did you land in your current roles? Ariel, can we start with you?
Sure. My current role, I previously served as the director of IvyWorks Indie Women in Tech at Ivy Tech Community College. Enjoyed the role in helping the program grow and just saw a position come available at Indie Women in Tech and decided I wanted to help make the program more broader. And it's been great ever since.
That's wonderful. So you're a byproduct of the program. Really, that's fantastic. Linda, to you.
I am 20 years in industry. And it just so happens that I worked at Stanley Black & Decker as global IT leader in digital and security business. I spent 20 years at Dow. Wow. And one day I saw the position at Ivy Tech, a VP of IT. And at first I wasn't interested because I thought, oh, I don't want to be VP of SAP or putting laptops on desks. But then I read about the position and I was fascinated. So I have a great job. I love it. Every day, and so I'm just really excited to be here and to be talking about it.
That's wonderful. And Gabrielle, to you.
Well, when I was in prep school, my math teacher said I should really never do anything with computers. So obviously, I immediately pursued a career in tech, worked at Microsoft, worked at NCR, then moved to California where I met my husband, and about 20 plus years ago, we co-founded 6 Feet Up and have been growing the company since then.
That's wonderful. I hope your math teacher is watching today. Gabrielle, would love to start with you and then hear from the rest of the panelists. How are you specifically investing in women and minorities and helping them succeed in technology?
Sure. So for me, as an entrepreneur, I think it's really important to invest in your staff. And I believe that the best staff you can have is a gender balanced staff. Mm-hmm. So we've always put a lot of emphasis in having, as many women as possible to kind of have a staff that has as many skills and, mm-hmm. and soft skills and talent as possible. So really focusing on when receiving resumes, looking at data first, not jumping into the resume, not looking at who sent the resume, but really asking job seekers to send, like actually go through a personality assessment first, mm-hmm. So that we can see the data first, and then only look at the resume once we have an idea of whether that person is going to be a good fit or not. I think that is really important because if your first inclination is to look at someone's background, mm-hmm. you may be everybody is biased, and so you might be following your own biases. So I do believe this is really important.
Yeah. Linda, how are you helping women and minorities succeed in technology?
Well, we have a number of programs and initiatives we're running at Ivy Tech, but I think the first thing we have to do is, a lot of organizations now want to have a diverse talent pipeline, mm-hmm. but in order to do that, you have to think about, and I love what you said about differences, you have to think about it differently. It's not always the technical background. So, at Ivy Tech, we have a majority minority campuses in our systems, and we have a lot of people of color in our programs, and so I encourage through meeting with employers to think differently about their talent pipeline, not to just focus on the four-year, the traditional, but also to look at us and look at the skills we are building for our students. But the other thing is being visible, right? When you can see us, you can be us. And so going out and being visible to students, to K-12, and speaking, I hope to attract a lot more people to say, you can look up and you can see her, I can do this too. And then finally, it's really working with community-based organizations. So working with InnoPower as an example. We have Indie Women in Tech. Mm-hmm. We're looking at, formed a Black Tech Thought Leader Network, talking with Indiana Latino Institute and the Latino Collective, but really searching for ways to engage with community, to create partnerships, to say, hey, we can help build talent pipelines, but we want to collaborate with you and bring tech to life for them.
Yeah, those are great tangible examples. Ariel, what about you?
I would say that we work on making sure that we're eliminating those barriers that keep women from thinking that tech isn't available for them. So even just giving out scholarship dollars so that is free or no cost so that they're able to go back to school either at 1150 or Ivy Tech and expand in those skills, or even just looking at some of those initial barriers of childcare or emergency assistance or transportation assistance that might keep women from saying, I can't do this, I don't have childcare after school, how can I complete my program, or I have no way to get to Ivy Tech and complete my education, how could I complete this program? So I think by us giving funding for those areas, it helps open up those floodgates so that women can say, okay, I can do this, but also I have those barrier busters that would keep me.
Yeah, great examples for the now too. Pivoting as we think about the next generation, I'd love to hear from each of you how your organizations currently are working to pay forward and pave the path for the next generation of women and minorities to be successful in technology. Yeah.
I would say for us, it's really looking at those early years. So elementary school, middle school, high school. For each one of those categories, we do have programming. We have TEA for our elementary students, which is hands-on activities for them to complete. So they really get an idea of what is STEM. And it's not some big pie in the sky thing. It could be simple as a Lego experiment. And then also doing our Ignite Your Superpower event that we've hosted for the past 4 years. We've had over 2,000 Central Indiana girls participate where they get hands-on experience with learning about STEM, but also being able to be on a college campus. And then lastly, I would say is pathways for high school students where they can compete in a reverse job fair and ask those employers, what do you need from us in order to jump into tech?
Yeah, and am I correct? Over $1 million invested by Indy Women in Tech into those organizations and partners.
Correct.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Linda, what about you?
I think it's to build upon what Ariel said, you know, the one thing we need to do is we need to be reaching out when they're younger, but also we have to demystify what computer science is. We have to stop talking about it like it's Star Trekian, right? And so a lot of what we're doing is saying, hey, we're going to map your passion to tech. So we're talking about software development, talking about what cybersecurity is, talking about what networking is in smart homes. So that's one way, is just appealing to kids to say, hey, this is what tech looks like. It's not Big Bang Theory, right? It's really just whatever your passion is, there is probably a tech pathway for you, but also reaching out and having camps and having activities where they can engage with us and learn more about our programs, leveraging platforms that we use through After School HQ or other ways that we can get programming there so kids can see, hey, I want to do a really cool tech thing, right?
That's fantastic. Gabrielle, we have just a few seconds left. Anything that you would like to add?
I think it's really important for us to invest in everybody's unique ability. So that's what I spend a lot of my time is coaching young women to be more assertive and to follow, you know, their true path back to following their passion.
Yes. Ladies, I wish we had more time. We could spend the entire day together. Thank you so much for your leadership. It really is appreciated.
That wraps up this week's special edition of the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. Remember, you can find all of this week's TV segments, as well as the top business news from throughout the state, at InsideIndianaBusiness.com. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our platform of free e-newsletters. This is Andy Ober for Inside Indiana Business.